Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host today, Pat Schlarbaum, and today we will be looking at an art exhibition at the Brunier Art Museum entitled In Pursuit of Wildlife Conservation, The Art of J.N. Darling and Maynard Reese. We will be speaking with Lynette Pohlman, David Fox, Rebecca Christoffel, and Maynard Reese, who are all connected to the exhibit in one manner or another. Today on Local Talk, we'll be exploring an exhibition that is currently showing at the Brunier Art Museum in the Scheman Building on the ISU campus. The exhibition is entitled In Pursuit of Wildlife Conservation, The Art of J.N. Darling and Maynard Reese. It consists of etchings by Darling and paintings by Reese that are truly some Iowa treasures. And first we'll hear from Rebecca Christoffel, an assistant professor at Iowa State.
I made this comment in my interpretive label about the federal duck stamp, the first federal duck stamp. It featured mallards. Mallards are by far the duck that anybody recognizes a mallard, particularly a mallard male with this beautiful green iridescent head. How could you miss that? And an artist that can capture that iridescence, capture that beauty, how could one not bond with that and think, wow, I want those to be around for my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. Yeah, and, you know, if you capture the right images and are able to do it authentically, there's incredible power.
We're here today with Lynette Pohlman,
Director and Chief Curator of the University Museums. And the University Museums is composed of the Brunier Art Museum, the Farmhouse Museum, the Christian Peterson Art Museum, the Anderson Sculpture Garden, and the Art on Campus program.
Quite an extensive outreach.
Yes.
Well, let's discuss your environmental awareness here on the university campus. Do you often have the opportunity to bring artists like Maynard Reese and Ding Darling to your
art museum?
Yes, I would say so. What the University Museums tries to do is coordinate and support the interactive learning between arts and sciences at Iowa State. So we look to the curriculums of the university and then try to bring a diverse visual expression and content in support of the curriculum. And so in this case, Darling and Reese made a great deal of sense. We've had the Darling collection since 1974, actually the year before the Brunier opened. It's the world's largest collection of Darling's etchings, and as many of us know, Darling was instrumental with a worldwide impact on the natural world. For a long time, we have also been interested in Maynard because we have an interest in significant Iowa artists, of which Maynard is one. When I became aware that Darling was Maynard's mentor, that made a match in Art Heaven. And so then we went about trying to organize this exhibition based on that notion. And it focuses around the federal duck stamp. Since Darling, he did the first one, and then Maynard has done five. He's been awarded five federal duck stamp, more than any other artist in the United States.
Let's talk about Mr. Darling's position with the Des Moines Register.
He was with the Des Moines Register a very long time. He was a Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial cartoonist. He was syndicated nationwide. I honestly don't remember the dates off the top of my head because, quite frankly, the show is not about his cartooning. This is about his fine art.
Excellent.
The distinction being that with his political cartooning, he had strong opinions on many things, conservation being one of the most enduring and one of the most important agents of change for conservation. Many people would comment that whatever Darling's opinion was, they would go with him, whether it was politics or whether it was the environment, and so his influence was very far-ranging.
Very trusted.
And those days that he wanted to get away from the Des Moines Register and not be Ding Darling, he went to his Piani farm, and he became J.N. Darling, the fine art etcher. And he would create these images that were near and dear to his heart. He never did them as many people think of as serious art, in the sense that he never intended to make a living by doing these prints. They were acts of love, and he gave them to people he was interested in. He didn't follow any of the art rules in terms of how you make a print or how you distribute it or how you sign it or how you keep track of it, because that wasn't important to him at that time. And these images that he created from the 1920s through his death really, I think, highlight not only conservation and the conservation he hoped we would cherish, because in the cartoons he showed the degradation of the environment.
Yeah, it was a very serious matter.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in the etchings, he really shows the beauty and the love of the place, and you can presume some of the really bad practices that were underway in his lifetime that he was trying to stop.
And that was in the 30s?
That was in the 30s, the 40s, 50s. Yeah. It was a lifetime thing.
Yeah, exactly.
If there's anything when you look at Darling, it is that that is exactly what he's trying to do, is to teach the young, and that we as human beings forget these things very quickly. Once it goes out of living memory from a human being, it has to be relearned again.
And we take things for granted.
We do. Yeah. We do. And if we were born to it or we experience something as it is now, we don't know it any other way unless you really go out of your way to educate yourself. One of the things that Darling would tell us as one of his legacies, we need to raise responsible children, educated, talented children that will be good citizens. And part of being a good citizen is protecting the place that you live.
Well, let's talk about Mr. Reeves.
Maynard, his story, and he tells it in the exhibition and in some of the videos that we have. And when Maynard was a very young man at the Iowa State Fair, he won at the age 13 a ribbon for his drawing of mallards. And that inspired him. I mean, he knew what he wanted to be at a very young age. And as a young man, about 18, he had a mutual friend that introduced him to Mr. Darling. And when, at a time when Darling was incredibly well known nationally and internationally, and for this very young 19-year-old boy to be introduced to Mr. Darling, who was well known for his drawings and wildlife conservation, was an impressive moment. Maynard had accomplished not much other than the Iowa State Fair Blue Ribbon. Maynard was so taken with Darling, and Darling with Maynard, and Darling, being his most abrupt self, as he often was, said, "What do you want?" And Maynard said he wanted to learn. And Darling said, "Well, then come on over." That began a relationship that lasted until Darling died. And Maynard would come regularly to bring his artwork, his drawing, his paintings to Darling and for review. And after a while, there became a time when Darling said, "Maynard, you've learned all that I can tell you. You're on your own, as you always have been. But don't stop coming by. Still come see me." So there was a personal, professional relationship. There was a kindred spirit there. Maynard created, and you'll see this painting in the exhibition, and it's on the front cover of the publication, a painting for Darling, and it was of a covey of quail taking flight. And he gave that to Darling. And Darling treasured that, and he put it in his wall at the Des Moines Register. And when Darling drew his own obituary, actually almost 8 or 9 years prior to his death, he had a heart attack and kind of scared him. So he did his own obituary cartoon. But that painting appears next to the doorway that you see Darling kind of in his shadow exiting. But the other things that are there are Darling's own duck stamp, his own image for the National Wildlife Refuge System, the painting of Farmer John, which you'll also see in the exhibition. So all the things that Darling treasured most, he put in that obituary cartoon. And having Maynard's painting there was very important. After Darling's death, the family gave that painting back to Maynard, and it was for this exhibition that Maynard announced last week that he was giving that painting that Darling treasured to the permanent collection of the University Museum. So that is now being accessioned into the permanent collection. Wonderful story, isn't it?
Absolutely. How does that touch your heart?
Oh, made me cry when we were standing there and we were looking at this painting in Maynard's studio, and I didn't know the background of the painting. And I was just admiring it and talking about the quail, and he said, well, how would you like to have that? And it was like, well, in a New York minute, Dr. Leith was in the room as well. And, of course, especially with the story, especially with the tie-in, that was the core of the exhibit. But to give such a treasured thing, both treasured by Darling and obviously treasured by Maynard, was, we should be very humbled at Iowa State.
You've created the venue, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that Maynard's recognizing, and it will be shared now with literally thousands and thousands of undergraduates that when they come to Ames.
I hope Ames folks, anyone and everyone. We have people coming we know from across the country for the opening. We have people from Colorado and Louisiana and mm-hmm. Wisconsin, and so I think that it will be seen far and wide. Because we're an art museum, we talked about the aesthetics of Darling's objects. We also wanted that science interpretation of mm-hmm. what, as you look at this and you can say, oh, there's, you know, 12 mallards here and aren't they graceful and et cetera. But we also wanted to say, what was Darling saying about the environment? What was the science behind these images? And so Irv Kloss and Jim Pease and Steve Lekwa and others from the department here also wrote interpretive labels to help our audience kind of bridge that science and art interpretation.
That's a real key overview.
Well, and I find that scientists and artists are of a kindred spirit. They're both very good observers of whatever it is they're studying. Mm. They observe well. They have visual comprehension, which leads them to understanding. That's how they often understand their world. That's not to say that an unsighted person cannot understand their world as well. But visual learning is something that scientists and artists share. I often find the biggest appreciators of fine art are scientists. Darling knew everybody. Darling got things done. I mean, he was politically activated, and he knew how to get people to move off of square one. So at the depth of the Depression, the same year that Hughes fired a third of the faculty at Iowa State because of the Depression, same year that he hired Grant Wood and Christian Peterson to do artwork, which is a very courageous act, mm-hmm. Darling comes forward and said, we need to invest more in our environment, and it needs to be a collaboration between business and professional people as well as academics, because Darling was also a critic. Whatever he supported, he also criticized in a positive way in trying to get better mm-hmm. product. And he thought academics didn't always reach out and apply as well as they could. So that's why he wanted that idea of mm-hmm. a cooperative extension, not only amongst educators, but against those practitioners out there that would inform the research and test it in a larger way. So in order to get that done in a year that there was not any money, he said, I'll spot you $9,000 mm-hmm. if you'll spot us the same amount over the course of 3 years. So it was $9,000 mm-hmm. over the course of 3 years.
Which is a lot of money.
Which was a lot of money.
However, he was a man of movement.
Oh,
In his
lightning movement. Yes.
In most of his works, it's always the movement.
Never set still. Even his obituary is a blur out the door. Absolutely. Yeah. And he knew how to get people to do things, whether it was with seed money or whether it was putting talented people together, whether it was embarrassment or intimidation, whatever. But it moved along. And so with that was how the first cooperative extension arrived here. Paul Arrington, who was a student of Aldo Leopold out of Wisconsin, came down to head that up, was here for many years. I think we still feel that legacy very much on campus.
Absolutely.
And are really quite proud of it. But I'm not sure everybody understands that Darling, in many ways, is the founder. Not to say that Paul Arrington, who did much of the heavy lifting, but to make the mechanisms put into place, that was Darling.
Do you feel this is the perfect venue to share that link to Iowa's leaders?
There are many perfect venues to share that story. It doesn't matter where it is. Darling would have wanted the story shared not for his recognition, but for the impact that we should do and make it our own responsibility. So if this exhibition moves others to remember, terrific. But it really is for all of us to undertake. I don't think Darling was ever in it for the look at me thing. He was never in it for the recognition.
Real good point. He was always striving for the greater good.
Moving on. It's always moving on. What's next? If we improve this a little bit, then what else are we going to improve in our natural world? And what else are we going to restore? And he received so many awards. I couldn't even begin to name them all. And he never particularly, it was like, fine, but I don't care. I appreciate that, but, you know, it doesn't move the process along anything. So he was not in it for self-glorification.
Well, Iowa's influences truly are global in scope and character. When an exhibit like this links two of the giants.
Mm-hmm. Actually a phrase that Tom Davis used. Tom was the essayist for the publication. And Tom grew up in Sioux City. Tom, as a good writer does, makes things succinct. And he was the one who referred to Darling as the father of the federal duck stamp and Maynard as the king of the duck stamp, because obviously Darling created it, invented it, and it was Maynard who has accomplished it more than any other human being.
Is there anything else that you would like to share with the listeners?
I would like to share that the Brunier and the other campus museums presents multiple exhibitions a year. And I would invite all of your listeners to come often. In fact, I would suggest they come four times a year. There are exhibitions with perhaps not this particular theme, but others that also have that aha moment. And if people are curious, as Darling and Maynard are curious of the natural world, you will explore your cultural art venues in your local communities and see what those messages are and see how many aha moments you have. As Darling would say, if you don't go out into nature and use it, you will lose it. So use Darling as a model who loved the beauty of the natural world, but also loved the beauty of the human expression, and seek those experiences out. Iowa State has a beautiful campus. I encourage people to walk it, look at it as a work of art. Seek out the beauty, and it fills your heart. Our website is www.museums.iastate.edu.
.edu.
Right.
So keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. You too.
Well, thank you for all you do for conservation, for all that you provide here at Iowa State. And your humility, your Iowa humility, is charming. But we need, Iowa State needs directors.
You never do it by yourself.
Isn't that the truth?
Oh, my goodness, no.
Yeah.
I mean, without Maynard, without Darling, without everybody.
Yeah.
Would you want to do it by yourself? No.
No.
Wouldn't be fun.
And Dean Gulley was probably the first to realize that.
I think so.
My name is David Fox. I'm the interpretation specialist at the University Museums. Just started full-time in August, so I've been working here as a student and transitioned into the position. So it's I think I have the best job on campus.
You've set the high water mark, right?
Yeah, so it's really pretty exciting for me to be here and to be a part of it. And we worked really hard this summer creating. We have a new lighting system that was installed, a brand new coat of paint on the old museum, and there isn't a better exhibition to showcase this new space. I mean, it's an old space since the 70s, but a new looking space with all the transitions over the summer. So to have the new lighting and to tell you the honest truth, to see Maynard Reese's works on the wall and then to put the new lights on them, that was a very special moment, because to see the works of art as, I don't know, in their true brilliance with our new lights are really quite wonderful.
As works of art.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And you see just how talented he was and how his attention to detail, when you look at a painting that he did and you can see every creature has a unique aspect, every feather is completely defined, and you feel like you're right there in the middle of his field or marsh, and then you have that special connection. And the people that have been hunters, the people that have enjoyed the outdoors, whether they be bird watchers or just walking to and from and noticing the nature around them, it's really neat to be able to have a personal connection with that. When you stand in front of a Maynard Reese painting, those memories come to mind, and if they don't, you really wish you had a memory like that, because you can feel the power and the passion of it. We have the Amy Worthen print over there, which is kind of a conversation about Ding, Darling, and the duck stamp in general, but more specifically, Darling's starting of it and how ubiquitous it became to have that nature scene indoors. She really tried to capture an image of an outdoorsman's living room environment, and it has ducks flying into the living room. And so you see these plaid, almost Scotch Guard sort of furniture pieces in there, so this kind of iconic, very 80s outdoorsman look. The wood paneled walls, so you can definitely, you're pulling that out of pop culture and interior decorating of the time. But this, and then you see nature prints on the wall. And then Amy has these ducks flying into the living room as kind of a conversation of the wildlife art, and the fine art that's being created with this sort of outdoors theme had really become this high watermark. Everyone had some sort of an outdoor print. They had their favorite artists that were really reflecting something about nature, something about the outdoors, and it had become, you know, very common theme in such a large number of people's home decorating. So she really thought, and still feels, I think, that Jay Darling and the duck stamp effort and that conservation effort was really the driving force behind that popular culture acceptance, sort of flourishing of that sort of art in that time period. So the appreciation of the outdoors was really a kind of set in its path, and they were able to utilize that into creating these incredible wildlife refuge system. But even in today's world, it takes a really loud voice to get people to think outside of their own comfort zone and to really change things. And it was really kind of at the time that Darling was starting, it seemed like that had transitioned over. And so his works of art in the natural scene didn't seem to be the fine art that it would be referred to as later.
That it was becoming.
Yeah, and so, but it still had this connection. So he was really using that celebrity to push forward his causes, but he also, in doing so, I think, really started the path back towards making that wildlife as part of the interior element, as part of the interior aesthetic. He seems to have signed all of his prints, all of his wildlife prints, with the J.N. Darling signature instead of the iconic Ding. So he really did see this, I think, in a different light. He wanted to kind of separate a little bit from his political cartooning, because he really felt it needed its own light. The fact that people knew him and knew of him, he was able to transition that into some experiences and able to transition that into some really bonus leverage, I suppose, and to get into places that someone else wouldn't have been able to. But still, I think he really did have that division and wanted to give it its own special place. And I think he was just incredible about, you know, utilizing his exposure in creating this sort of dialogue, at least, that broadened and became this force. And I think it's kind of died down a little bit, and hopefully, you know, something like this will bring it back to the forefront, at least locally.
Exactly.
And you never know, the way that things are with our pop culture, it seems like something can go viral in just a moment's notice. If at the same time, it's like a flash in the fire, so you have to really strike and hope that you get that sort of exposure and then capitalize on it before it loses interest again. But it seems like that was something that he really started And you know, something that really blew my mind, but he said that his five duck stamps and his mentor Jay Darling's duck stamp had never been on display in an exhibition like this before. And I was scratching my head going, are you serious? And it's just one of those things that it just blows my mind. Mm-hmm. Maybe the duck stamps have been on display, but the originals, and so we have the original duck stamp and Maynard's original duck stamps. I find that to be such a horrible oversight. One thing that's really, this community is awesome. Some of our most ardent and staunch supporters are the community members. But this has really, I think, drove that audience a little bit more just on the nature of what it is. So that the word has gotten out and people, we had over 350 people here for the opening.
And this will be targeted for Dr. James P's presentation on October 15th.
Yeah, we have the two remaining things here are the other October 15th, the lunchtime gallery talk, and that will be awesome. A lot of people are talking about that. Then we also have a weekend showing of the film, and we show this on a loop here in the museum, but we actually have Sam Kultinsky, the producer, coming in for that film showing on November 3rd. It's a Sunday.
2 p.m. At the Brunier Art Museum.
Brunier Art Museum, November 3rd. So it's a little ways off yet, but that would be a really great opportunity. Mm-hmm. Sam Kultinsky did an incredible job with the America's Darling film. He's been in great contact with us and very helpful in everything. So it would be really neat to have an opportunity to hear him talk about his process of making the film. And he has a special passion for this. You're welcome. Thank you.
So hi, I'm Rebecca Christoffel, and I am an assistant professor at Iowa State University in the Department of Natural Resource Ecology and Management, and most of my appointment is as the State Wildlife Extension Specialist.
And one of your tasks was to assist with the Darling Reese exhibit at the Brunier Art Museum.
Yes, it was. I have felt very privileged to participate in this effort. The whole faculty was asked if they would be willing and able to write interpretive labels for the artworks being exhibited at the museum.
So you had the opportunity to connect with Mr. Darling and some of his previous works. Was there research involved?
There was a lot of research involved, as a matter of fact, and I actually teach interpretation or how to be a naturalist at Iowa State. And this is what my students learn first thing in that class, is that this is, in a lot of respects, a scientific endeavor, because you are going to do a lot of research in order to be able to write a meaningful interpretive label. Yeah. So I learned an awful lot about Dean Darling and an awful lot about things that he did other than drawing cartoons, which was just fascinating to me. And really gave me a great appreciation for the man and his contribution to wildlife conservation in the USA.
Yeah, he's a giant. Share some of those.
The thing that really struck me, I love the cartoons and the commentaries that his cartoons make on a lot of issues associated with conservation. But what I had not known about was the fact that Dean was very successful at the Des Moines Register, had himself settled in the city of Des Moines, right across from Waterworks Park, very happy camper, very comfortable life, and it was actually Roosevelt who requested Dean come out to Washington, D.C. He headed up the U.S. Biological Survey for a year, and at that time, he came up with the idea, the proposal for a federal duck stamp in order to raise funds for waterfowl management and waterfowl habitat management. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, he actually designed and drew the first duck stamp. So, you know, I just find that fascinating, and what a treasure to the state of Iowa.
Director Pullman pointed out that artists and scientists have a common bond with the research and the visual complexities that we appreciate. How does wildlife art affect the life in your home?
Wildlife art, for me, there's nothing like the real McCoy actually getting out there. But somebody who can capture what I consider to be the essence or the spirit of the wildlife and be credible and authentic about it. There's just something so moving about that. And if you think about wildlife conservation, it's not just the research and knowing the facts. It's also helping to forge those emotional bonds. And I think of artwork done well, artwork that's done with all of this research behind it, so you are producing authentic images, and is what enables a lot of people forge emotional bonds with wild plants and animals.
Very well stated. A lot of the Ding Darling's key role as a leader occurred in the Depression.
Right. Well, and that to me is what is so fascinating about it. You know, I really look to these people who came before us as heroes. When you think about the fact that Pittman Robertson was 1936, 1937, you're in the depths of the Depression, and yet people are willing to deal with an 11% excise tax on munitions, on the equipment, on the ammunition that they need to go out hunting so that we can continue to have funds for managing wildlife habitat and for managing wildlife populations. And though the hunters were paying that 11%, that also was benefiting non-game wildlife. Without habitat, doesn't matter. You're not going to have game, you're not going to have non-game species. Yeah. And so everybody benefited from it.
There was some hunter safety, but for the primarily the Pittman-Robertson legislation was designed to create habitat, mm-hmm. to have places for people to go. And maybe you realize that Aldo Leopold did one of our first mm-hmm. wildlife surveys in 1933.
Exactly.
So it was right about then that we realized we had about 500 deer in Iowa. And without Pittman Robertson, there was not going to be any. There probably wouldn't be any deer now.
No.
So it was quite a paradigm shift that was realized. People like Ding Darling kind of forged the way. I hope in his passing in 62 that he had moments of reflection and thought it was all worth it.
I hope so. I hope he understood at least somewhat his contribution to wildlife conservation in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people have trouble understanding how much they have contributed, and you don't always get to see the fruits of your labors, right? Again, this comes back to thinking longer term versus thinking short terms. Perhaps that duck stamp cost you $11 today or $10 today.
I think it's 15.
15.
Currently, yeah.
But longer term, you know, think of all of the millions and millions of dollars and all of those millions of acres of habitat that have been protected through people's efforts, through their small investment 25 years ago. It's not just doing it for yourself, it's doing it for those who come after you, your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren.
What are your thoughts on the Brunier Art Museum having such a high quality? I mean, this is beyond belief.
Yes, it's really quite a unique exhibit, and it is amazing that we have it right here in our backyard. I mean, for one thing, this isn't the Smithsonian Institution that is holding this exhibit. This is right here at Iowa State. You can go in for free, and you can see this. It's a wonderful opportunity, and I really applaud the museum and the university. You know, people as high up the chain as President Leaf have really been supporting this, and Lynette Palmer of the museum really was the mover and shaker behind making this happen. I also applaud their coming to faculty members in the Natural Resource Ecology and Management Department and asking, would you be interested in putting together some interpretive labels for the exhibit that spoke a little more to the conservation aspects of these prints, of these pictures. And I felt like, wow, what a wonderful opportunity. I am hopeful, you know, we have 500 undergraduates right now in the Natural Resource Ecology and Management Department, and I encourage everyone that I talk to to go and spend a little time there and learn a little something about these icons in Iowa in terms of conservation.
And now wildlife artist Maynard Reese talking about his award-winning duck stamp of the Black Lab King Buck.
The King Buck dog stamp is probably the most popular of all the stamps, and Ducks Unlimited was one of the main leaders in exploiting it. And they called it the Buck Stamp, not the Duck Stamp.
Because that was the dog's name.
Yeah,
Buck.
King Buck. A very interesting story in my relationship with that program. Fellow who used to work at the Des Moines Register went down to Nilo Kennels when they heard that there could be a dog used in that year's stamp. John Olin asked these fellows, "Do you know anybody you think can win this thing?" And so they immediately said, "Why don't you get him and let him come down and see what he can do?" And so I went down to Nilo Kennels, and King Buck was there along with about 20 other dogs they were training, and the trainer threw a mallard out in the water, told King Buck to go fetch, and he fetched it very perfect and brought it back, and everything was fine. So he threw it out again, and King Buck just looked at him. He said, "What are you trying to pull on me?" He said, "I don't have to do this all the time." So they had to get other dogs to do that. I had no idea what type of a stamp I wanted to do, and I just wanted to get all the information I could. Then I decided, well, I might just want to make a portrait of him. So I asked if there's some place we could go and sit down and have a session with him. Yes, they had a room, a little building that was King Buck's with all of his trophies and everything in it. So they put me in there with King Buck, and he sat very quietly for about 15 minutes, and I sketched, and in the 15 minutes he got up, went to the door. That was the end of the interview. And so that's what I based the thing on. But yeah. It won 2 national retrieving championships 2 years in a row. I had quit my job at the museum in 1950 to go out and work full-time freelancing, sink or swim type of thing. So I was hunting for work everywhere. Sure. And fortunately, I had known and contacted a lot of people and a lot of other artists. And I knew Roger Torrey Peterson, and he was the art director of the Federation at that time. And I said, "Roger, you got any work I can do?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "We make little stamps. We'll tell you what the subject matter is." And I made little paintings about that size. And I did that for 15, 20 years, and it was a godsend to me. One job after another spawned something else, and so it worked very nicely. But I not only stayed in waterfowl and upland game birds, but anything with nature, of course, with the Wildlife Federation. They'd say, "We got to have a saddleback seal today," and they wanted some snake the next day, and you had to produce, no matter if you never heard of it before, you had to do what you could for it. And so it was good training, and I had done the Iowa Fish and Fishing book. You probably know it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And I figured, well, I had done all the Iowa species, about 60-some of them in there. I thought, well, I've done all that. Why don't I do all the rest of them in the country? And I thought, what company would have enough money to send me out and get all these fish? I thought that Life magazine was probably the most able to do it, but I had no way of knowing anybody in New York City. And but fortunately, Wally Hainlein, who was the art director of Better Homes and Gardens when I worked there.
Right here in Des Moines.
In Des Moines, quit his job here and went to New York City with House Beautiful. So I called him up and I said, Wally, can you get me into Life magazine? He said, well, I don't know, I'll try. And he called back and he said, I can't get you to the director. How about the assistant director? I said, great. And I was off and running, so I went in and showed him my plan. Assistant art director said, we got to go in and see the director. So we went in there, and a half hour later, I had a job to paint 73 species of freshwater fish in 7 months. I had to do it.
Oh my word. This was
in September. It came out in June of 1955, but I had to travel all over the country. Had to start in the northern section before it froze up in order to get the different fish. Some of the experiences I had collecting the fish was far more interesting than the painting.
But you always required that actual specimen to go from.
Yeah. I had them down in 7 months and took them in, and I had heard that they, you know, had research staffs that were very critical of any scientific stuff that went in the magazine. And I had checked out in Seattle, Washington, on some of my western fish, an ichthyologist there, and I saw him looking at my drawing, and I said, you see something wrong? He said, no, I'm just counting the rays on the anal fin to see how accurate you are.
The rays on the anal fin, yeah.
So when I went in life, I said, aren't you folks going to check this out? That's what we hired you for.
Oh. You had professional veracity.
They said, well, you've done the fresh water, you might as well do the salt water. So I did the salt water in 2 years.
Well, you certainly have brought water and water-loving critters to the forefront.
As I said in the article, I just love water. I grew up with water. Mm-hmm. I was fishing when I was 3 years old.
Oh, do you remember your first bluegill?
Yeah. I threw the pole on my shoulder and ran up the bank and drug him out.
Scrapping all the way.
So I've been fishing now for 90 years.
I might explain, we're looking at wood ducks, drake and hens, and a more colorful duck could not have been created for an Iowa wetland.
That's what I do as often as I can.
How about the water here in Iowa? What would you like to see us devote our efforts towards?
I have a different view of water than most people. I think it is the number one item in our civilization that most people don't realize how important it is. and our lives depend on water, and we're just increasingly ruining it. I thought with doing waterfowl painting, if I could make the scene attractive enough, I could get the people sitting indoors watching television to go outside and maybe see something. And when they see it, they're going to begin to get interested in it, and they're going to want to save it, which means we need more habitat of marshes and wetlands, and that's the number one purification system that's ever been devised.
Yeah.
And we purposely destroyed most of it.
We certainly take it for granted, or just can't seem to get our priorities.
Yeah, and so that's one of the reasons that I concentrate on things that people would have a curiosity to see. And once they go outside and start looking around, they will begin to get interested. And once they get interested, then they become involved and find out all the problems and want to help.
Well, it opens up our heart, and then if we love it, we'll be better stewards.
Yeah,
I think your paintings illustrate that link very, very well.
Yeah.
Well, this is a wonderful opportunity to experience the world of Maynard Reese. Is there something that you would like to emphasize for the listeners about the museum display with Mr. Darley?
This is the largest exhibit of my original paintings that's ever been shown in the state of Iowa. Mm-hmm. And all these are private paintings. That's all that's said is private collection.
I really enjoy your drawing, the pencil drawing that has the blue ribbon.
Yeah, that was in 1933 or 34.
My gosh.
Yeah.
And you were a student. You were in school. Was that at Okoboji?
No, I was living at New Providence, Iowa at that
time. Oh, okay.
And these little towns and little schools, they never heard of artwork, of course. But the teacher noticed that I had a flair for this, wanting to do things like that.
Yeah.
So she said, why don't you make me a drawing and I'm going to send it in to the state fair, which I thought, great. And she did.
She was a pretty strong influence then.
That really started me on a one-track road.
Did you know other artists there in
New
Providence?
Not at that point.
Not at that point,
no. In little towns, it would be a rare thing to,
very much so.
To see anybody interested in them.
Do you recall your first Ding Darling caricature in the Des Moines Register?
I remember first meeting him, but I don't remember any particular.
How did that first meeting go?
It was scary because I was 18 years old, and I don't know. Did you ever meet him?
No, he passed in 62, but I sure loved his, I'd wait for the Des Moines Register to see
He was a no-nonsense, gruff voice.
Well, that's what I understand.
And he just took one look at my paintings I brought. He said, I can tell you they're nice, and that won't help you a bit, or I can tell you what's wrong with them. What do you want? I said, I want to learn. He said, well, let's get to work. And we did for years. But he wasn't as much the drawing. He told me the secret of it all was, of course, do 5 drawings a day for 5 years, and automatically you'll be an artist when you get done. And so it's 95% practice, and I'm still practicing.
And you're still practicing, We're always becoming, it seems like, but my goodness.
But that's the fun of my job over some of the others. You never get there. It's always a new plateau that you strive for.
Right.
That's the fun of it.
Could I ask you about the bobwhite quail
that
was presented to Mr. Darling? Was that a specific scene? How did that come about?
Well, he had been doing so much help with me and telling me of things that I would never see. I thought he deserved something from me, an appreciation, and so I thought of the bobwhite quail. And so I gave it to him, and he immediately hung it in his room where his drawing board was, and he just kept it there for the years I saw him. And as you probably know, the end cartoon has it right beside his door.
Yeah.
Which was quite touching to me, that he had all his favorite things there. His Iowa Farmer and his two Pulitzer Prizes and everything. My painting, years later, the family gave it back to me. They thought I ought to have it, so we kept it here for years and years. So when this thing started up, Dr. Leith and Lynette came down to the gallery to talk with me about the commission painting they wanted. And I think I said, or would you be interested in that quail painting? And they, right, it was Dr. Leith that said it, but that's wrong. It was Lynette. She said, in a heartbeat. She wanted it. So we have given it back to the museum. So Dr. Leith says, we now have two original paintings of Maynard's.
Yeah, that's just fantastic story. You're sharing it with the world. This is truly a remarkable privilege to share you with our listeners. KHOI, we're the heart of Iowa. Is it asking too much? Do you have one more Ding Darling story?
Okay. Can remember one distinctly, which was that I had done a painting a pronghorn antelope running, and I had him leaping, you know, like deer. And he took one look at it, and he said, Maynard, you better do more research. My recollection is that when they're running flat out, they're just like a racehorse, smooth as silk. And he said, better do more research. And that's what I did. Yeah.
And you listened well.
Yeah.
What a pleasure.
Well, it's different anyhow.
Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And see listings of our past guests and resource contact information. You will also find lists of our guests and contact information to the organizations as we speak with and other resources mentioned on our shows. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
it takes everybody working together to get these things done.